G'day, how the bloody hell are ya? Welcome everybody to episode number 184 of the Average Man Podcast. We set sail, brought in by a nice little soulful number there, because I'm gonna take you guys out with a nice soul track from an artist I only just discovered last night at the end of this podcast. So that'll be, I'm excited for that because it's a cool little track. He's got a bunch of great little tracks. I'm gonna leave you hanging between now and then to find out who that is and what the song is as well. So we are live from Peaceful Bay in the southwest of WA. This is a tiny little town, I guess, village, just outside of Denmark, about 40 k's back up the coast. What direction would it be? Probably west, northwest up the coast from Denmark, between Denmark and Walpole, really. You pull off the main highway and there's a little village down the end of the road called Peaceful Bay. You kind of have to enter through the village, through the caravan park to get into the village. And I think it's pretty much chalets. So some of those are on closed lease where people live in them, and some of those are on open lease where people rent them out for holidays. And then there's a caravan park attached to it as well, where we're currently staying. Not a bad little spot. It's been like, it's a sprawling sort of caravan park, semi-shaded sites, grassy, semi-grassy sites. A lot of them are quite uneven and it's kind of very sporadic, which is fine. But we did drive into this place and have a look at it last year at the recommendation of my father, actually, who stayed here before. And it was really green grass, lush looking, really quite pretty and nice. And the same old story that we've sort of come across so far in the southwest is that this year it's not super green. A lot of that grass is dead. That's kind of been the story of the southwest for us this year, man. Everything is super dry. They've had, like, you know, you speak to the locals down here, they've had the driest year in 70 years or something like that. Very, very little rain. They had a bunch of 40-degree days down here. And it shows, man, like everywhere from Bunbury-Busselton area, it just starts getting, you know, it's not very green. And you go further and further down, you go all through Dunsborough, Yelling Up, Margaret River, Wychcliffe, Augusta, Pemberton, all the spots that we've been. It's just been like all the fields on the side of the road are very grey, brown, I guess I should say brown. There's obvious bushfire damage from recent years, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago throughout a lot of the regions, dead trees, you know, new undergrowth, but just like they've had a hot, dry year and very, very windy as well. The wind really has limited our options over the last couple of weeks. You know, we've been trying to plan beach days and you get down there and it's just blowing its tits off. The water's freezing. We knew that was going to be the case. I don't mind that. It's just the wind, man. It's the chill factor from the wind and just trying to fish, throwing the line in and it's just getting blown straight back up on shore. And it makes it unpleasant. It's funny how the wind can really change your experience, you know, more so than the rain or the temperature even. Like, rain obviously changes things a lot, but you adapt and you do different things in the rain, whereas the wind, like, you still want to get out and do the beachy summery types of things when it's in, you know, 25, 26 degree day. But you get to the beach and it's just blowing a gale and there's nowhere to really hide from it down here because the coastline's all facing the one direction. There's some little nooks and crannies, you know, around on the lee side of a point or whatever. But, you know, for the most part, very, very windy and it's limited our options a fair bit. I did get some decent footage this morning out there before the wind kicked in on the drone and the GoPro. So I'll put that together over the course of the next 24 hours and pump that up on the YouTube channel. I'll probably put a little snippet of it on my Instagram as well. But, you know, we haven't had the best experience from the southwest so far. We spent a fair bit of time down here over the years and we know that it has a lot more to offer as far as just what you can do and you know, the weather, really. It's been quite expensive as well. I think too expensive, really. Like, we need to get our our fortnightly or weekly accommodation costs like right down. You know, obviously you can do that with free camps and bush camps and farm stays and house sitting and a few other things that we've got planned in along the way. But there's times where you have to go to these paid campsites and caravan parks, and the standard seems to be about $60 a night, which is pretty expensive, obviously. You know, we're hoping to not pay that much every week. Happy to do a caravan park every fortnight and maybe pay that much for a part of, you know, for a period of time. Preferably not, preferably still less than that. But, you know, we want to be able to pull up, have full water power, do all our washing and, you know, fill up the water tanks and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just been bloody expensive. So, I don't know, I'm hoping that changes as we get out of this southwest region. We can start living a bit more within our means, because that is sort of chewing through the budget for accommodation. You know, having those $60 a night stays quite often. So we do need to get that right down. Another unexpected expense has been groceries, man. It's bloody expensive to buy food in these country towns. You know, you don't really notice it as much when you're just here for a holiday for a couple of weeks, because you kind of do a big shop before you go away and then you just top things up along the way on your journey. But we're doing our full weekly shops out at, you know, IGAs and pretty much spent IGAs so far. And it's so expensive, man. It's like, I realize now, it's like an extra $70 to $100 more expensive than a Coles or Woolies shop, like a full big load up. Now, I dislike those franchises for several reasons. You guys would know this from listening to me. You know, Woolies getting involved in political discussions like Australia Day and you know, deciding not to stock any Australian flags or Australian paraphernalia before Australia Day. That pisses me off. Stay out of our politics. Give us food. You know, driving the competition out so that they can have a duopoly on the market. You know, they can duopolize the market, which they've successfully done over the last 15 to 20 years. That was something that people used to say in the early 2000s, you know, like they're Coles and Woolies are going to drive the prices down. They're driving small farmers out of business, small grocers out of business. And then once they have a duopoly on the market, they can drive prices up. They're definitely doing that. We're seeing it happen before our eyes. But the reality is that the independent guys are usually far more expensive. You know, there's some exceptions. I'd say Farmer Jack's. There's one of those near where we were staying in Perth. I don't know how many of those there are around the state. I don't know. There's possibly some other independent grocers who are of that same, you know, in that same bracket as Farmer Jack's, who are cheaper than the Coles or Woolies, or on par at least, maybe cheaper in some things, you know, fresh produce, maybe more expensive in other things, but on par with them. I don't know. But if certainly, you know, a lot of the independent guys, and IGA being the biggest one in WA, they're far more expensive. That is the reality of the situation. And I think the bottom line here really is it comes down to our government needs to put some things in place to reduce the cost of living for normal Aussies, because it's fucking hard out here, man. It really is. It's hard out there. And you know, obviously not having full-time jobs anymore and living on, you know, healthy wages up in the Pilbara. We whinged about the cost of living in the Pilbara because they really do tax you for living up there. There is a tax on you for living in the Pilbara in a mining town, which always pissed me off because we need people up there doing those jobs, and they should make life easier for them, not tax them for it. You know, it's not an open tax, but that's what they're doing. They're taxing you for living there. They're penalising you for living there and charging you more. When someone else, the mining companies, the government, other people should be footing the bill for the small guy who's up there making the clock work. But I thought that we had a good grasp on how expensive living costs can be, saving hard for the last several years so that we will, you know, you know, spendable income, or what do you call it? You know, there's a specific term for it, and you guys know me and my stupid memory. this words and phrases just elude me at the worst of times. But anyway, our you know, spendable income, excess income, whatever you want to call it, there is a phrase for it. I can't remember right now. Was fairly tight, and we had all those expensive fuel, expensive groceries, more expensive alcohol. But it's been even more noticeable living down here in the southwest for the last few weeks, particularly groceries. Fuel's been expensive, but not as expensive as the Pilbara. But the grocery shops have been through the roof, man. And, it's hard out there for Aussies, mate. And our government's busy putting these stupid policies in place around green energy and trying to squeeze the farmers, to make things harder for them. They're too busy doing that to give a shit about what it looks like to the everyday family out here trying to survive, mate, And when have we ever been asked as people, like, what would you rather? Would you rather this misguided, ulterior motive-driven green energy and less meat agenda to be pursued at all costs for the sake of appearing to be doing the right thing for the environment, for our health, because it's all just a facade anyway? Or would you prefer to make your own decisions on what you eat and how, what sort of, energy savings you make in your day-to-day life and have less government oversight and return to more affordable essentials like housing, food and fuel? Like, they're the things that are important to everyday families who are struggling to make ends meet week to week. This green agenda bullshit, it's all someone else's agenda. It's being pushed on us. And again, our government are so great at this and we let them do it. They come up with these fucking ideas that don't benefit us. They enforce them and then we foot the bill to pay for them. It's ridiculous. So you've got all these mining companies, and we spoke about the gas exportation a few weeks back and how they tax the gas industry at 16 times less than they do in countries like Qatar, who are one of the other leading exporters of gas. And same with our mining industry, our coal and ore mining industry and gold mining industry. Like, they need to be taxing these guys far, far more money. They're still going to make billions of dollars, and we should be a super affordable, thriving country. It should be easy for Australian citizens to live here because of all the resources we have. This is supposed to be one of the greatest countries in the world. We have all these resources. We're technologically as advanced as anyone else in the world. We have all these great minds here and schools and education, all these things going for us, but it's so fucking expensive to live here. And that's bullshit, mate. That's a problem our government have created. And they do it because they can. And, if they give a fuck, they can change it. I'm clearly no expert on this, but I have heard experts talk about it, and it seems quite obvious that there are certain things that they can do and certain things that they can abandon that would move us back towards more affordable living costs in this country. Anyway, I digress. I won't go any further down that pathway, but it's something to think about. It's something to keep in your mind. And it's something that we as Australians need to be aware of because we're the only people that can make a change. But anyway, as I said, I digress. So where else have we been before we got here to Peaceful Bay? We were in Pemberton just before here. And look, it was very sleepy during the week. We got there on a Sunday afternoon and we found out that afternoon or the next day when we started looking at things to do, that everything's closed. Everything's closed Monday to Thursday. Something's open Wednesday afternoon. Berry Farm closed until Thursday. The winery's closed until Wednesday. There was a wine bar in town that looked nice, closed until Thursday. The trout farm just closed for repairs. I was looking to take the boy fishing for some trout, actually catch him a fish, closed for repairs. There's two climbable carry trees. There's the Bicentennial tree and the Gloucester tree that I climbed. I climbed one of those, Gloucester tree, I think, many years ago when we were last in Pemberton when I proposed to my wife. And they're closed for inspection because apparently one of the Rio Bar steps that come out of one of the trees must have rotted or rusted out and fell out when someone was climbing it. So they're doing some inspection on those. Everything was closed. It's very, very sleepy. We went on the tram, which was nice. Not a huge day out, but we went on the tram. That was nice. We drove around, went to the chocolate factory. We went out and cruised around some of the properties out there and got some fresh produce from the side of the road. We did the walk through the, you know, through the Carey Forest. We swam in the pool. There's a pool, like a man-made dam slash pool next to the caravan park there. It was freezing cold, full of marin and all manky on the bottom of it and shit. But we swam in there. You know, we did what we could. We were busy every day, but there's, you know, we had to work for it. There wasn't a lot going on, man. And things started opening up apparently on Thursday. We drove out Thursday morning, so we will never know. But yeah, you know, the caravan park was nice, very large, very laid back, sort of nestled in a little valley there, which was quite beautiful. Very, yeah, as I said, very laid back. We had a nice big site, but very dusty. The same deal as the other towns around here. All the grass is sort of dead. It's mostly dirt and dust. We had a very dust-covered site, you know. It's a little stressful after a few days. You're just constantly fighting to keep dust out of the van. You get that chalky dust on your feet, which is horrible, especially if you've got sensory issues like me and my son. So that was a little bit of a letdown, just the dirty dustiness of it, but was a nice caravan park, beautiful trees. There was 28 birds there that were, you know, landing on our arms and eating, you know, cashews out of our hands and stuff. And there was a little quenda, which I didn't know what that was, but it's like a quokka type marsupial that lives in the southwest region of Australia. It's like a bandicoot, I think they call it, similar to like a brown bandicoot. It lives down there. It was coming into our campsite at night and cruising around eating, you know, bits and pieces off the floor. Looked like it had a manky, scabby, parasite-infested eye, but we didn't get that close to him, so it didn't bother us. But yeah, so it was nice, but again, kind of dry and a little bit sleepy during the week. Yeah, very dry. You know, there's a fire ban down here until the 30th of April, so we can't have fires any of our campsites here in the southwest. It hasn't been cold enough to warrant it, but it makes it more interesting to sit outside around a fire and have a beer and a drink and a yarn, listen to some music and whatever. And we're not doing that because there's no fires until the 30th of April, so that's a little disappointing as well. Our next stop after here is Parry's. You know, you can't book Parry's, but I went and spoke to the caretakers a couple of days ago and we should be good to get a site there tomorrow. There's only two caravan sites out the front. We should be able to bag one of those if I get there tomorrow morning, which would be great. Parry's has been a favourite of ours over the last few years. We've done three Christmases there, I think. And we're hoping to get a bit of a break from the wind at some point. We're there for about 7 days, I think. We're there from the 25th to the 1st of April, so whatever that is, 6 days, 7 days. And hopefully we do get a break in the wind. There's a nice bit of rocks there on the beach. You can go fishing off. You know, I can go for a surf out the front there if I'm going off to get in the water. I have been swimming. We have been swimming in the freezing cold water, so I will go for a surf there anyway. Great big flat sandy beach. Can take the dog out there every morning, and it's a very laid-back camp. It's a bush camp. They do have a toilet block there, running water, heated water. But, you know, there's no power or water to your sites or anything like that. So that's the plan for the next 5 to 6 days. Come tomorrow morning down to Parry's. And again, I really hope we get a let up in the wind there and we can actually spend some time on the beach. And then after that, we head down to Albany for the school holidays. So the 1st of April, we go to Albany. We're house-sitting there for 2 weeks, which will be good. We've only ever passed through Albany and have never spent a lot of time there. So it'll be good to get sort of nestled in there and see what the town's about and then do some day trips out from there to see some of the spots within Cooee distance of Albany. And that house-sitting opportunity over the school holidays gives us a chance not to be fighting for campsites and caravan parks and whatnot through the school holidays. I just didn't want to be dealing with that. They'll be full, they'll be noisy, there'll be people everywhere, they'll be more expensive, you know. Just weren't interested in that. So we get to sort of sit that period out and then, like I said, just do some day trips and some exploring around Albany while we're there. We've got a list of things we want to get from, you know, Anaconda and Bunnings and Woolworths and Kmart and stuff when we get to town that we've built up over the last couple of weeks. So we've got plenty of logistical things we can do while we're there. I think there's a movie theater there, a little one. There's a couple of movies the kids want to watch and stuff that are coming out. So that'll be good. It'll be good to get to Albany and spend a bit of time there and get to know the town a little bit. So, yeah, man. And the next stops after that will be Bremer Bay, Hopetown, Esperance. And then we hit the Nullarbor. So we'll probably spend a week in that region, Bremer Bay, Hopetown, Esperance. And again, depending on the wind, if it's just windy and shit, I'm hoping not. I've wanted to see Esperance, these beaches people talk about. for ages, you know, the best beaches in Australia and all this sort of shit. So, you know, yeah, if they're not windy as fuck, maybe. So hopefully we get some nice days there, even if we have to do the homeschooling in the afternoons and get up early and go out to the beach in the morning, because typically you find quite often you get a nice morning and your wind comes in mid to late morning and, you know, fucks the afternoon up. So, you know, we definitely prefer to do it the other way. We like to do all the shit we're going to do throughout a day and then pull up down the beach 4 or 5 in the afternoon and, you know, let sunset kick in and yeah, that's definitely the way we enjoy doing it. But you know, that's the Pilbara way, where you're looking at the sunset over the water. So it's a bit of a different vibe down here. We just got to go with the flow and roll with the punches a little bit. But yeah, plenty of things to look forward to. And as I said, Parry's the next stop. And after that, we're sort of in unknown territory, which is exciting. It'll be good to be into these places we've never explored before, never really spent any time before. And then crossing that border and going to South Australia, I think will be another one of those like checkpoints where it's like, wow, we're in the unknown. We're in another state. We've never been here. Everything's new. We've just got to completely wing it, talk to people along the way, find out the best spots to go, deal with the weather and plan around that. And I'm looking fucking forward to it, mate, you know? Yeah, it's I'm definitely looking forward to it. As I said, the ocean's cold. It's definitely wetsuit material. We could never live down here because of the cold. You know, and the northern summers are brutal for sure, but the cold for me and for us is worse. The wind and the cold and the rain and, you know, it just doesn't inspire me to get out and do things. On that, there's a quick comparison for you guys. Between beaches, you know, rivers and forests. I definitely love forests. You know, I have romanticized them in my head because of, you know, movies and stories and you know, seeing beautiful pictures of them. And you know, you just have this romantic idea of forests in your head, you know, with a big river running through it or big lakes and things like that. I love the huge trees, all different types of plants and, you know, rivers are great. They're usually safer and can be very beautiful as well. I love all that sort of stuff, and they're great to spend time in. But I think for me and for us, I think we probably both agree, me and my wife, is oceans represent, you know, freedom more so than the forest and, you know, the rivers do. Look, there's always a rule and a pathway and a fire restriction or no dogs allowed or don't touch the trees or et cetera, in the forests, you know, and around rivered areas. But beaches just seem to have more options, you know. You can drive onto them, you can swim in them, you can fish in them, you can surf or paddleboard, you can dive and shoot fish, you can let your dog run around, you can let your kids scream and play and make a mess, you can play loud music, you can have a fire. You know, there's something about all that that just calls to me, just says freedom to me, you know, and obviously that's not all beaches, definitely not in the city, but far more often, you know. Far more often, and there's very little physical oversight on beaches because there's too many beaches to monitor. So you can go to a beach and not see anybody for the whole day, or you can go there and see someone, but they are half a kilometre away because they want the same thing as you. They want space, they want freedom, they want their own little patch of you know, paradise for the day. You know, but when it's cold or windy, they're miserable. So, and that's what we have had so far. So there's a bit of a yeah, I think it's funny. This is, again, why I think we're really going to enjoy Queensland, because I like to be near the forests. I don't want to live somewhere like Exmouth where it's just beach and just beach scrub and, you know, no real trees and it's just very flat and that kind of bores me, you know. I love the forest, but I couldn't be just in the middle of a forest away from the beach and the freedom of the beach, you know. I haven't spent any time in the mountains, so I can't comment on that yet, but I really like the idea of Queensland where you have both. You have beaches and then you can literally have a forest coming up to the beach and, you know, a lot of rivers and, yeah, so this is, it just feels to me like there's going to be, and you get the heat, you know, it's hotter there, quite often not as windy as it is down the south of Australia. So there just seems to have a lot of the boxes checked for what we're looking for. But, you know, neither of us have spent, dog, you bumped your head, puppy. Neither of us have spent overly long time in Queensland, so it's all theoretical at this stage, you know, hence the reason we're going to get over there and spend some time and check it out. But yeah, definitely, definitely interested in seeing what that has to offer. And this is the exciting thing that we get to do on the way around, is we're looking for a home. So while I'm rating campsites and places, I'm checking out the surrounds, and we're driving around and looking at places. I'm going for a run through the area and having a good look at what it looks like by foot. I've got the drone now, so I can set that up and have a good look at the area, reporting back to you guys on what we think and what we see, and you know, how we find certain places, and trying to give you guys good usable information, but also looking for somewhere to live. So we're judging everything, you know, against that stick as well, while we're traveling around, which is cool. Which brings me to something I wanted to get into this week was some of the biggest challenges that we've faced so far. Now, I was ready for the way of life, you know, like driving a lot, cleaning the kitchen constantly, always dealing with rubbish, you know, not a lot of rubbish to storage options, never really feeling as clean as you can in a house, fighting sand and dust from the van. No real chill space, you know. We've got camp chairs, or we've got a bed. You know, there's the little couch in the van that I'm sitting at the moment, but it's not the same as having a big couch in the living room. You know, car and van logistics and problems. I've got a problem with the car while towing at the moment that I need to sort out in Albany. Finding space for things and always packing and unpacking the things you want. You know, all that sort of stuff I was prepared for. I didn't romanticize the day-to-day living in my mind. Dog, you got to stop banging your head, pup. Move away from that. But yeah, so that stuff's fine. That was to be expected, and I was under no illusions that I was going to be living some trouble-free life. But what I wasn't probably prepared for was just living on top of each other. Like, you know it, you say it, you think about it, but to do it, getting in each other's space all day is hard. You know, we already lived in a small house and spent a lot of time together, but living in a small space constantly together is going to take some time to adapt to. And as I said, the weather hasn't been great, so it's not as encouraging to just sit outside under the annex and you know, just spend all your time outside. We spend as much time out there as we can, but quite often it's cold or windy. So living on top of each other has been one of the bigger challenges. It's going to take some time to get used to. And also our kids, they've always been particularly difficult in this area, that they won't initiate their own games or just go and play outside on their own. They always want us to entertain them, you know, or they want to be on their screens. It can be very, very frustrating. You know, they need other kids to entice them into normal outside kids games for any extended period of time, or they need us to give them ideas and get the ball rolling, and you know, then it's usually a short-lived activity, which is another part of the reason I wanted to do this, was to get them outdoors and get them used to using their imaginations and replicate growing up in the pre-internet days like we had. But it is hard because they rebound back to this, what are we going to do next? What are we going to do now? What can we do? I'm bored. Dad, will you play with us? Can we go on our screens? Can we have our iPads? And it's like, and we do spend a lot of time with them. It's not like I'm just waking up in the morning and kicking the kids out the van and go and see at dinner time. It's like, you know, we spend heaps of time with them, but as soon as we want to try and get anything done, which is a reality of life, they either fight, or they moan, or they say they're bored, or they want to go on their iPads, and it's frustrating. So that's been hard. We need to break them out of that mindset, you know. Like, they're outside right now with mum doing arts and craft, but she's got to be there doing it with them, you know. So I don't know. That's a unique challenge that we really need to just keep working at. You know, we went to the beach yesterday morning. There were some kids there their age, and they were gone for 2 hours, just running around in the dirt doing nothing, just what kids are supposed to do. But on their own, they won't bloody do that. And it's very, very frustrating and disheartening. It's like, what did we do wrong? Why are they like this? So that's been hard to deal with. You know, always trying to keep them busy, civil, and off their screens, you know. So this is his default thing: screen, 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 screen. So that's hard. And I know not all kids are the same. Our kids are who they are, and we love them. They're beautiful. Wouldn't have them any other way. wouldn't have them any other way, except they do want them to play on their own more. So, you know, so that's hard, man. It's hard. You know, that's definitely been our biggest challenge currently. And I feel like it's going to take some time for that, you know, to embrace that lifestyle and really thrive. And the other one that goes sort of that I haven't mentioned here is the homeschooling. It's been hard, man. It really has. Like, we're getting new. It's all new to us. And our kids are very, you know, my daughter is undiagnosed, but very likely probably ADHD, like my wife. So her attention span, and she's got this pathological, what is it called? I can't remember what it's called, but it's like she just wants to say no. She wants to fight everything. So when you say, you know, left, she wants to say right. When you say up, she wants to say down. And I know a lot of kids are just like that, but it's another level with this girl. So getting her going, getting her doing school can be a huge challenge on its own. And then my boy with his attention span, you know, we were always told that we should get him checked if he was on the spectrum for autism and as when he was younger. And he's grown out of a lot of those sorts of traits that people used to point to as he's got older. But his attention span is he can just space out like you would not believe. Kid looks through you, like looks at you, and he's not even – like, where is he? He's a million miles away. So I don't know what they learned at school last year or how they learned anything at school last year, because they're very hard to get to concentrate and engage and cooperate when it comes to those sorts of things. So that's been a big challenge. But that is a challenge that I'm up for. I think we were not going to put them back in the normal public schooling system as – you know, until they get to high school, and we'll make another decision on that at the time. So I'm happy they're out of the public school system. Again, if you're a teacher listening to this, I'm not shitting on you. I just don't like the system. It doesn't work for my kids, and I'm not sure that all the values really line up with what I want to teach my kids moving forward in life. COVID really highlighted that for me, where they were drilling fear into kids at a young age. I was not about that at all, and the conformity and compliance and all that bullshit that I just don't want my kids to learn. Not from them. They can learn to conform and comply with what I say and my wife says, but not just what, you know, the system says. You know. I'm not going to go on that rant right now. But so I'm glad they're out of the public schooling system. I'm glad we're involved in their education and know where they need to work harder, because we are learning. We're getting the work done. They are learning. It's just hard going, you know, and that's 3-4 hours of your day, 5 days a week. It can be stressful. So that's another thing that we're adapting to. And absolutely, you know, if you're another family thinking of doing what we're doing, this is the kind of information I want to give you guys. I want to be completely transparent and honest and not just blow up Instagram with all happy this and happy that and, you know, the best 15 seconds of my day. The reality is that these things can be hard, for sure. None of it would make me not do it again, though. I'm 1,000% in on this decision and the journey and the challenges. I'm just laying them out for you so you guys know what we're dealing with here on the road. Realities of life, you know. And as I said before we started this journey, I knew there was going to be these difficulties and obstacles and challenges and problems. Life's full of them, but the difference was going to be they're our difficulties and challenges and problems, not those of a middleman, not those of, you know, that my boss tells me are the problems for the week or the client tells me are the problems for the week. I'm not dealing with the problems of 10 other guys, you know, who work underneath you who've got their own life's problems, not their problems. There's four of us, there's a car and a caravan, there's the dog, and our problems are the problems we deal with. And solving them is directly beneficial to me and my family. And for that, I have endless resource and energy. So I'm up for the challenge. Just letting you guys know what the realities are. If you're considering doing this, I would say if this is something you want to do, if this is something you want to do, you've got that dream, you watch all the traveling families and YouTube channels and you watch people's posts and you wish you could go there and there and you want to take your kids on the road and you're thinking about home. If that's a dream you've got in you, you know if it is or not. If it is, fucking do it. 100% do it. Don't let fear hold you back. Just know what you're getting yourself into. That's all I'm trying to say to you. You know, and I'll do that. I'll continue to be upfront and open and honest and let you guys know how things are going for us and what the problems are along the way, man. So yeah. And while I'm on that, I'm going to read out this week's blog that I'm going to post this afternoon. It's not yet edited spell checked. So hopefully it's all good. But I'm going to read this out because this is in the vein of what we were just talking about. It's this week's blog's called What Really Matters. Money, status, belongings, career, comfort. These things must be among the most important, if not the most important things in life, because we're all chasing them. We're all dedicating the majority of our lives to tracking them down and attaining them. We all make huge sacrifices to inch ourselves a little closer towards them every day. But when it's all said and done, when we're on our deathbeds, many moons from now, reflecting over the lives we've lived, do you really think these things will be what we're proud of? What we wish we had more of? Do you think we'll be disappointed that we didn't accumulate more of these things while we had a chance? I don't. Money. I hate money, but I need it. I want it. I want it because I need it. I need it to do the things I want to do, to live my life the way I want to live it, to show my kids the world, to have financial freedom and give my family a chance to live without constant stress. Because a life without money is a life of continual stress and a constant feeling of uneasiness. Do we have enough money for the bills this week? Can I afford to buy my kids new school uniforms or send them to the camp? Do I have money to pay the car to get the car fixed? How much will it cost? Can we afford a holiday this year to give ourselves a break from the constant stress and pretend that we live a carefree life for just 1 week? And money is a tricky thing, to be sure. Where do you draw the line between making enough money to alleviate the constant stress and provide the above opportunities for your family and being obsessed with making more money just for the sake of it, just because of the status attached to it, just because you can? And that's a good problem to have, to be sure, but a real one nonetheless. The act of getting caught up in the game of money simply for the status connected to it is one of the devil's most cunning tricks. It's highly rewarding and society is completely geared towards telling you that you're on the right track, that you're doing things the right way when you get caught in that loop. You can buy the things the corporations tell you you want. You can give your kids and your family the best of everything. You can rub shoulders with all the right people, be in the right rooms, having the right conversations. Others will envy you and put you on a pedestal because they assume you have your shit together, that you have things figured out. Everything and everyone will be telling you that what you're doing is right. But if you're not happy or content, only you will know, and only you will be able to engineer a solution to change your course and redirect your energy in a direction that brings you fulfillment. And then everyone will tell you that you're mad, that you're fucking things up. You're throwing it all away. How will you buy all the stuff if you don't keep making all that money? You've got all the stuff, don't you? It's good stuff, you know? It's the newest, flashiest, most shiniest stuff. How will you live without it? What will people think of you if you don't have the latest mobile phone, car or laptop? If your house isn't impressive and modern and expensive, yeah? You need the stuff. The stuff is what shows the normal people, the people you interact with briefly each day, how important you are, how successful you are. Stuff makes you happy, right? And for most of us, the best way to make all that money, to buy that stuff and gain that status is through a successful, high-powered career. A career like that is a marvelous thing. It'll afford you the status you're striving for, the money you need to buy the stuff you don't want. So it doesn't matter if you enjoy it or if it's your passion or if it's your calling. All that matters is, does it pay well? Is it relatively easy? Are you good at it? If so, then you dive headfirst in and don't look back. Don't ask questions, right? Imagine if we could apply the same type of dedication and one-mindedness to the things that we truly love in life, the things that we were born to do, the things that bring us fulfillment. Imagine if we approached our family life with the same vigor, our hobbies with the same obsessiveness. If every damn day we got up early, earlier than we wanted to, got ourselves set for the day and spent 8 to 10 hours toiling away at the things we really wanted to be spending our time doing. But we don't. Most of us don't anyway. We spend the majority of our energy on our careers. We try to muster up enough enthusiasm in our spare time to spend our last bit of energy on our hobbies, our dreams, the things that really move us. Why? Because the things that make us the most money, as well as giving us the aforementioned benefits, give us the thing that we all crave for subconsciously, that thing we all drift towards without even knowing it, the very thing that is eventually killing us, comfort. Comfort is an underlying driving force that is built into us through a million years of evolution. The desire to be safe, warm, well-fed, and comfortable. It was a rare thing throughout most of our history, yet we can now achieve it if we simply follow the playbook for long enough. But the catch is, it's what's killing us. Putting our feet up, doing less, working smarter, not harder, paying others to do the jobs we dislike. It all weakens us day by day, and slowly what was once 80% of our effort becomes 100% for us because we don't push ourselves. And then we find a way to only put in 70 to 80% of that. And again, our new 80% becomes our 100%. And slowly but surely, we comfort ourselves into an early grave. Sure, modern medical science can keep us, our useless bags of bones, breathing and consuming late into our 80s or 90s. But what is the quality of life? How active are we? How useful are we? How happy are we? Make no mistake, the relentless pursuit of comfort is slowly but surely killing us, and everything we do with our careers, money and status is slowly leading us towards the most comfortable life we can create for ourselves in our senior years. But no matter how comfortable you are, if you're not happy, not fulfilled, not healthy, then you will always be chasing something that eludes you and dealing with a host of problems that you didn't bargain for. And that's the rub, really, isn't it? No matter where you are in life, you'll have to navigate the inevitable dramas, trade-offs, disappointments, failures, and so on. They're all an inescapable part of life. The difference is you can choose the circumstances which you experience these things. You can decide what you're fighting for and who benefits from winning those small battles. You can't choose the battles, but you can choose the battleground. So I've chosen my current battlefield, and it's far less traversed battlefield than the previous one I was on, but no less filled with conflict, dramas, every day, hardships, stress, problematic logistics. The difference? The difference is that this road is of my choosing, and the problems directly impede or benefit me and my family with no middleman. No employer who's telling me these things matter. No client telling me what I need to care about. No problems born of other men's folly that become my responsibility. And those are problems that I have endless time and energy for. So while I'm battling still, I'm not fatigued. I'm not impartial. Instead, I'm passionate. And that's what really matters. There you go. I don't know how long that was. 6 or 7 minutes. I suppose you don't need to go to my blog and read that this week now. But I thought it was just fitting to piece that in there at the end because, you know, that was what we were just talking about. And that's what I wrote this week. So it was what was on my mind. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. And do go over to my Substack and subscribe. Share the shit on your fucking Facebook page too. What does it cost ya? Come on, what does it cost ya? Just go there, click the fucking share button, put it up on your Facebook page. Go, hey, go read this guy's Substack. It's fucking good. It's insightful. It's well written. Anyway, I'm going to go out now. I'll take you guys out with the song I promised at the start of this podcast. A song by Teddy Swims, who I only heard last night, on a chance reel my wife had on her phone. And I'm going to go out with the song I heard that got me into this guy called Lose Control. So thanks again for listening. One more week. The Average Man Podcast, episode number 184, was it? We set sail. And here we go on the way out with Teddy Swims, Lose Control. Something's got a hold on me lately, though I don't know myself anymore. Feels like the walls are all closing in and the devil's knocking at my door. Whoa, out of my mind, how many times did I tell you I'm no